Hey everyone, thank you for coming and apologies for us being 15 minutes late. We did the job properly. So, good morning and welcome to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council's Special Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McKeown and I'll be chairing this meeting. A couple of points before we start. If you have a mobile phone, can you please switch it off or switch it to silent? And can I ask members of the public in the gallery to refrain from speaking out loud while the application is being discussed. On my right I have officers from the Planning Department, and on my left I have officers from Law and Administration. Officers from the Planning Department will present the application as it appears on the agenda. Members of the public who have indicated to speak will be given 10 minutes, and I'll indicate when they have 1 minute to go. If in the case of more than two speakers in objection or support, they will share the 10 minutes. Officers from the Planning Department will present each application. Sorry, I said that. Ward members are entitled to speak for up to 10 minutes as well. An audio recording is being taken of this meeting, which shall be published on the Council's website. Members of the committee are reminded that they do not enjoy any immunity as that is enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning application before them in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework and the local plan, together with any other relevant planning matters. So we can move on to the agenda. First item is apologies.
Councillor Jones, substituted by Councillor Cooper. Councillor Fordham, substituted by Councillor Hood, and Councillor McNaughton, substituted by Councillor Reid.
Thank you very much. Declarations of any members' interest or lobbying?
I've been lobbied, had an email from the developer and a phone call from a member of the public.
I had a...
Similarly.
Yeah, I had an email
from the
developer. I
did forward it to the planning as soon as I received it.
Yeah, received it.
Equally, Chair, I said I couldn't comment.
Yes. Okay, good. We come on to the first item, which is planning application 23/36938, Lower Farm, Droynton Lane, Grinley, for a solar farm. We've been on the site visit this morning, so I will ask Vanessa here to take us through the report. Thank you.
Thank you. The location plan shows the extent of the site outlined in red. The site is located within Stow-by-Chartley Parish, adjacent to the hamlet of Droynton. The application site comprises two areas of land. The main site is approximately 63 hectares in size, and the substation site is approximately 0.7 hectares. And an aerial view of the site. The main site is located to the east of Droynton Lane and consists of 11 parcels of land which are currently used for grazing. Braun Brook enters the main site to the northwest. The northeastern boundary is adjacent to Black Hoff Plantation here, and the majority of the eastern boundary abuts the Newton Gores Plantation here. The borough boundary with East Staffordshire Borough runs along the application's eastern boundary. To the west is Plough Farm and Droynton, which comprises of dwellings and farmsteads. To the south is agricultural land with a small number of dwellings and several farms. The substation site, here, is located approximately 480 metres to the southwest of the main site and contains an existing 15 metre high pylon with an overhead power line. The substation site is adjacent to the junction of Stow Lane, Droynton Lane and Droynton Road. Stow Lane forms the north boundary of the site. The substation site is surrounded by fields. A number of public rights of way cross the main site. Right of way Stow by Chartley 27 runs through the north of the site from here, diagonally across here, and then across to here, and through the site along this way. And in the south of the site, it is intersected by two rights of way, Stow by Chartley 0.1620, which runs from Droynton here and goes through the site towards the eastern boundary, and Stow by Chartley 0.1621, which runs from here and skirts the edge of the site boundary to Droynton Road. A right-of-way, stowed by Charlie 18, runs adjacent to the southeastern boundary of the substation site, along here. The photo plan shows the location of the following photos. Image 1 is looking east from Droynton Lane from an existing field access. Image 2 is looking northeast on Droynton Lane towards the northern portion of the site. The proposed access would be to the north of the existing field access. Image 3 is looking into the northern portion of the site from the existing field access on Droynton Lane. Image 4 is within the site looking east from the public right-of-way stowed by Chartley 27. Image 5 is within the northern portion of the site again, looking west towards Droynton Lane from the public right-of-way stowed by Chartley 27. Image 6 is from the same footpath looking north towards the Black Hoff plantation. Image 7 is the same footpath looking east. Image 8 is from the site boundary to the rear of Lower Farm on the public right-of-way stowed by Chartley 0.1620. Image 9 is looking towards the substation site from the junction of Stow Lane, Droynton Lane and Droynton Road. Image 10 is within the southern portion of the site looking west towards Droynton from the public right-of-way stowed by Chartley 0.1620. This image was provided by the agent as the footpath was inaccessible at the time of my visit. Image 11 is from the same footpath looking east. Again, this image was provided by the agent as the footpath was inaccessible at the time of my visit. Plan 1 is the proposed site plan. Permission is sought for the installation of a ground-mounted PV solar farm generating up to 49.4 megawatts of electricity for a period of up to 40 years. The main site will contain the solar panels arranged in rows on an east-to-west alignment shown in blue on the plan. A battery energy storage system will be sited within the northeast portion of the site adjacent to Black Hoff Plantation, here. This comprises of a bank of 20 containerised batteries with 10 medium voltage skids. The energy storage system would have an overall capacity of 30 megawatts, which would discharge at times of high demand. There would be a transformer inverter units throughout the site, sited adjacent to the proposed internal access tracks. These are shown dotted throughout the site. These step up the generation voltage to the connection voltage of the local distribution network. Two spare containers for housing spare transformers and inverters and 5 water containers would be located in the most northwestern corner of the site near to the main access, here. The main site would be accessed from a new vehicle access point from Droynton Lane, again here. Existing agricultural vehicle tracks and field entrances would be utilised and new internal access tracks added where required. These are shown in orange on the plan. Running around here. The parcels of land within the main site would be enclosed by stock-proof fencing. Pole-mounted CCTV would be installed at various points around the perimeter. The substation site, which would contain a customer substation, shown at the front in green here, and a distribution network operator substation compound here. This would surround the existing pylon and contain various electrical apparatus, including a communications tower. The compound would be enclosed by palisade fencing. There would be an underground cable route along Droynton Road connecting the two sites, from here to here. Plan 2 shows the proposed landscaping strategy. The existing trees and hedgerows are shown in dark green and the proposed trees and hedgerow planting shown in olive green. There is proposed planting around the majority of site boundaries to provide increased screening. Along the rights of way, there'll be significant tree and hedgerow planting and areas of mixed meadow and grassland. And the land around the solar panels will be planted in a meadow mix. So the footpaths run across here, all the way along here, and again the footpaths run across here and up the side here. The following plans show the components of the solar farm. Plan 3 shows the proposed solar panels. The panels would have a width of 4.85 metres and a maximum height of 3.10 metres. The lowest point would be 0.8 metres to 1.10 metres in height from the ground level. The panels will be tilted between an angle of 15 to 30 degrees and would be static. Plan 4 shows the substation site, which comprises of the existing pylon here. The connecting wires are shown in blue here. Isolating and metering equipment, a transformer, a communications tower, a control room, and a switch room. Plan 5 shows the proposed 15 metre communications tower, which would be within the substation site. Plan 6 shows the customer substation, which would be at the front of the substation site. Plan 7 shows the on-site transformers. This has three components: a cabinet, the transformer, and a power conversion building. Extract 1 is from the proposed site plan. It shows two transformers sited together adjacent to the access track in yellow, surrounded by a bund here. Extract 2 is from the indicative drainage plan and shows a drainage swale around the transformer in green. Plan 8 shows the medium voltage skids, which are within the battery energy storage system. Plan 9 shows the battery energy storage system. The MV skids are in pink and the containerized batteries in blue. Plan 10 shows the pole-mounted CCTV. This is 3 metres high and will be monitored remotely during the operational phase. There will also be a speaker mounted to the pole. It also shows proposed stock-proof fencing, which is 1.9 metres high with small mammal gates here. Plan 11 shows the proposed access to the main site from Droynton Lane. Plan 12 shows the proposed access to the substation site from Stow Lane. Plan 13 shows the proposed additional passing places on Droynton Lane in red. The existing passing places are shown with an orange dot. Figure 1 shows the indicative surface water management plan from the flood risk assessment. The drainage, existing drainage ditches are shown in light blue. So along here. The proposed linear swales throughout the site are shown in light and dark green. So example here and examples here. These would measure up to 5 metres in width and have a half a metre depth. The swales would direct water, surface water to the existing drainage ditches and provide attenuation during storm events. The plan also includes optional filter drains shown in dashed orange, example here, between the solar panel arrays to intercept runoff and direct water towards the swales and existing drainage ditches. The submission has demonstrated that there is no existing or proposed hydrological link to the Chartley Marsh Sack. Figure 2 is from the landscape and visual appraisal document. It shows the zone of theoretical visibility and the viewpoint locations. The coloured areas are where the development is theoretically visible from a 2 metre eye height based on topography. Figures 3 and 4 are from the Landscape Design Public Right-of-Way document and show the indicative landscaping proposals for the Stow by Chartley 27 right-of-way in the north of the site. Figures 5 and 6 are from the same document and show the indicative landscaping proposals for the Stow by Chartley 27 right-of-way in the west of the site, at the top, and the Stow by Chartley 0.1620 in the south of the site, at the bottom. And back to Plan 2, which shows proposed layout and landscaping. Since the committee report was completed, we have received 22 additional neighbour objections. These, however, do not raise additional material considerations which have not already been included within the report. National and local policies support the provision of renewable energy schemes, and the development is considered to be acceptable in principle. With regards to agricultural land value, 8% of the land is grade 2 or 3A, which is defined as the best and most versatile agricultural land. National policy advises that BMV land should be avoided where possible. In this case, the BMV land is surrounded by lower grade land and would therefore be impractical to farm these areas different to the rest of the site. As such, there would be no benefit to avoiding the BMV land in this instance, and the development is unlikely to lead to significant permanent loss of BMV agricultural land due to its temporary nature and the proposed construction method. Once operational, the land would be grazed by sheep, which would continue the site's agricultural use. The proposal is for a 40-year period, following which the scheme will be decommissioned and the site restored for agricultural use. The construction methodology comprises minimal use of concrete, and the recommended conditions would secure suitable soil management and a decommissioning and site restoration plan. With regards to the visual impact of the development, looking first at the substation site. Whilst the substation site would not retain the agrarian character of the siting of a substation within the rural area is not uncommon. The proposal also includes landscapings which would provide screening. The substation would provide the required connection to the grid, and as such on balance is considered to be acceptable. The submission includes a landscape visual impact assessment, which includes a zone of theoretical visibility and assesses the development's visual impact from 8 viewpoints. In summary, the LVIA considers that the highest level of impact from the development of the main site would be a medium magnitude of change and a moderate adverse landscape effect during year one of operation. However, the mitigation measures are considered to reduce the level of impact to a low magnitude of change and a minor adverse landscape effect after 15 years of operation. The visual impact of the main site would predominantly to be to the public rights of way which run through the site. Amendments were made to the scheme during the determination period, which included the removal of areas of solar panels, the provision of additional landscaping, and the widening of the rights of way corridors. The loss of some views from the rights of way are considered unavoidable due to the large scale nature of the development. However, the impacts are considered to be reversible in the future. With regards to impacts upon heritage assets, whilst there are no heritage assets within the site, there are a number around the site. The proposal is considered to cause less than substantial harm to the setting of nearby heritage assets to the lower end of the spectrum. The harm is considered to be outweighed by the public benefits of the development. The recommended conditions would ensure that further archaeological investigation is completed prior to the commencement of development. Highway safety has been a key consideration for this proposal. The proposed access points from Joynton Lane and Stow Lane are considered to be acceptable by the Highways Authority, subject to their recommended conditions. The construction phase is expected to last 6 months, and construction traffic would access the site from the A518 Uttoxeter Road via Grinley Lane and Joynton Lane. There will be one main temporary construction compound within the main site, which will provide sufficient space for parking, deliveries, storage and turning of HGVs. The majority of the equipment for the substation site would be delivered to the main compound and then redistributed via light goods vehicles. During construction, the highest average number of movements per day is expected to be approximately 79 two-way movements, comprising of 58 cars or light goods vehicles and 21 HGVs. Following discussion with the Highways Authority, the developer is proposing a number of traffic management measures to mitigate the impact of the construction traffic. These include making HGVs wait at a lay-by until the site operator confirms that Grinley Lane is clear of construction traffic, in order to limit the use of Grinley Lane to one HGV at a time, providing HGV escort vehicles, providing 6 additional passing places within highway land, and providing temporary traffic lights on the construction route, also providing banksmen at the substation site access. The Highways Authorities have no objections to the scheme, subject to their recommended conditions, which include securing a final construction traffic management plan to include the aforementioned measures. Once operational, the development would be largely unmanned. There would be approximately 15 maintenance and inspection visits to the site per year. This is not considered to impact upon the local road network. The additional passing places would be retained during operation and after the restoration of the site, and as such would be a long-term benefit to highway safety. With regard to the impact upon residential amenity, when considering the separation distances between the development and the neighbouring residential properties, the proposed landscaping and the nature of the scheme, it is considered that the proposal would not cause a material loss of residential amenity with regards to outlook, overbearing impact, loss of daylight or sunlight, or overshadowing. The construction of the development is likely to cause some disturbance to neighbouring residents. However, the construction period is relatively short and conditions are recommended to limit construction and delivery hours. The solar panels would not result in any noise impacts. However, the associated infrastructure, such as the battery storage facility, would emit some noise. As the final equipment details are not available and the associated technology is improving rapidly, it is considered necessary to secure a further noise assessment and mitigation measures prior to the commencement of development. This would allow the LPA to ensure that the nearby residents would not be unduly impacted by noise once the development is operational. With regards to external lighting, there is none proposed for the main site during operation. The substation site would have four floodlights on columns. However, details of these are not provided. In order to ensure that external lighting is of a suitable design, given the raw location and the proximity to residential properties, a condition is recommended to secure the exact details of any external lighting. A condition is also recommended to secure details of any construction external lighting. The development is not considered to have a detrimental impact upon residential amenity with regards to glint and glare, as glint would only occur during the early morning around 6 a.m. for less than an hour during spring and summer months. The glint would be limited to the properties immediately to the west of the site, however the existing and proposed landscaping would largely prevent the glint. Turning to ecology, the proposal is not considered to detrimentally impact upon nearby protected sites. A condition is recommended to secure a construction environmental management plan to control dust pollution and avoid water pollution to protected sites. The proposal would not detrimentally impact upon protected species, subject to appropriate working methods being followed. The proposed fencing of the main site includes mammal gates to aid wildlife movement across the site. The development would deliver a total biodiversity net gain of 79.75% through the proposed landscaping and habitat creation. This is significantly greater than the 10% which is now required by legislation. The proposal would only require the removal of a total of 10 metres of hedgerow. However, the removal would be offset through the proposed landscape planting. All trees are to be retained and provided protection during the construction period. With regards to flooding and drainage, the site is within flood zone 1, the zone of least flood risk. The Bourne Brook runs along the northern boundary of the main site, and an unnamed watercourse runs through the south of the site. The submitted flood risk assessment demonstrates that surface water generated by the development would discharge to the ground and to the existing land drains as per the existing scenario. The indicative surface water management plan includes the provision of linear swales throughout the site. The swales would direct surface water to the existing drainage ditches and provide attenuation during storm events. The indicative surface water management plan also includes optional filter drains between the solar panel arrays to intercept runoff and direct water towards the swales and existing drainage ditches. The FRA concludes the proposal would provide a betterment to the current uncontrolled runoff, as attenuation areas would be provided. There would not be an increase in downstream surface water flooding. The lead local flood authority concur with the findings of the FRA and raise no objections, subject to securing a final drainage design. In conclusion, the development supports the government's aim towards tackling climate change, and the proposal is strongly balanced in accordance with the development plan policies and national guidance. The application is therefore recommended for approval, subject to the conditions listed in the report. However, condition 2 does require updating. The third plan listed in the condition should be omitted and replaced with drawing B14 planning design. There was just the wrong reference written there. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you very much. Now I invite members of the public who may wish to object. I have two names, Mr. Richard Brayson, Mr. Christopher Shaw. Are you both speaking, or just one of you?
Just one.
Just one. Okay, Richard. Thank you. If you'd like to come to the table, you have 10 minutes. And once you've used up 9 of them, I'll let you know. So whenever you're ready.
Thank you, members, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Stowe Parish Council and the Droitton Conservation Group. Consisting of residents of our local community, many are here today. More would have attended, and we consider it not democratic to call such an important meeting in the day during the holiday period when people cannot attend. Firstly, could I ask why were the planned pre-commencement conditions agreed between the borough and the developer on the 12th of July, nearly 2 weeks before the planning date was publicised and before planning has been discussed here today? We fully appreciate the need for renewable energy. However, this proposal is not in a suitable location. Unlike the majority of other solar farm applications, where people are not directly affected, Lower Farm is different. in that residence will be directly affected by the constant glare from these panels and the continual noise from inverters. 31 properties will be directly or indirectly affected by these proposals, which represent 100% of Droynton residents, plus surrounding areas. A further 22 properties are impacted by the proposed access route. The developer has never spoken with any resident about these proposals. More time and effort have been spent on the public right-of-way and no thought given to those of us who actually live here. And in your report, no report has been mentioned once about the community. Three solar farms of over 500 acres, two in Droynton alone, within a 1 mile radius, is total saturation and should be viewed as a nationally significant infrastructure project and not processed individually, manipulating and abusing the local planning system. Due to the location, no thought or consideration has been given for the impact on residents' mental health. This is destroying our community and the residents who have lived here in homes in Droynton all their lives, and unless they move, this development will affect them for the rest of their lives. This makes us totally unsuitable location, especially when this and further development is proposed, affecting the number of residents who live here. It is important the planning committee is also aware of the adjacent proposals in Yew Tree Farm, Droynton, and another in Newton. A further 12 solar farms are planned in or adjacent to Stafford Borough, covering over 2,500 acres, with more proposed. This application has no community support or community benefit. Our objection, however, is supported by Stowe by Chartley and Hickson Parish Council. With over 351 genuine objections were submitted, 260 or 74% were within a 3 mile radius, and a further 20 personal impact statements have been uploaded since the planning date was announced, which demonstrates real community concern. We hope you have taken the time to read our objections. One letter of support was submitted and signed 232 times, all outside the area. This is a petition and recorded and should be recorded only once. Standing in the middle of the town centre with a clipboard asking people to sign a letter asking if they agree with renewable energy are material grants to support climate change, not this application. The letter is aimed at belittling our genuine community concerns, and we hope you have taken the time to read that letter. The location is close to Chartley Mosque, a triple SSI site and Ramsar site of significant international importance. Residents are genuinely concerned about chemicals leaching into it from solar panels or batteries. The battery energy storage system is located next to dense woodland, but close to seven properties and furthest away from the landowner's property. We have serious concerns over the noise, fire risk and vibration generated by the cooling fans and 18 inverters running 24/7. No sound deadening has been proposed. Batteries are also located close to a high pressure gas pipeline, something the developer or the planning department has failed to mention. Road access and safety. No developer consultation with landowners or common courtesy to discuss beforehand over the location of passing places, many infield gateways or private drives. Vehicle traffic counts were conducted in the wrong location, therefore failing to capture the full impact, including commuter traffic and bus route 841. The developer advises they can control their construction traffic, but they have no control over other road users, farming, residents and leisure. The installation of traffic lights over a 6 month period is totally unacceptable to the local community. Adjacent applications will follow the same route, therefore doubling the impact. That is 42 HC 28 movements daily, or 5,644 during the 6 month installation period and potentially beyond. Safety of other road users is a significant concern, as these lanes are used daily by walkers, runners, cyclists and horse riders. Police and fire concerns. The police report raised concerns over the increase in criminal activity. There is a 48% increase in criminal activity where solar farms are installed. Our community is already a rural crime hotspot. Our own livestock have been slaughtered, beheaded and butchered in the fields, along with break-ins, farm equipment and fuel thefts. This has put fear into the local community, including close family members and neighbours, a fear of what you might encounter if you venture out at night. One farmer would be assaulted in his own yard. This has and will change our way of life. Why should the community be subjected to this additional risk from this development? The Staffordshire Fire and Rescue Service report asked that alternative water sources be considered to tackle a fire safely. Does the site have adequate water supply, yes or no? This has not been established in any report. The best storage units are also non-compliant with fire and rescue policies and procedures. Has grid connection been established, yes or no? Surely this has got to be a pre-condition approval. Has the planning officer explained to the planning committee just how long it may take to get access to the grid? Today, you will have travelled along totally inadequate, unsuitable and unsafe access routes and witnessed the visual impact to our local community. You passed many residential properties in Grimbley, Droynton and Leigh Heath, demonstrating clearly this is not a suitable location. The County Council advised motorists not to use the country lanes through Grimbley and Droynton as they were unsuitable for heavy traffic following accidents in 2023. Meeting our energy goals should not be used to justify the wrong development in the wrong location, as at the expense of the local beauty, character and tranquility of Staffordshire's countryside. Protecting the global environment is not an excuse to trash the local environment. National Planning Policy Framework, paragraph 174 to 188. Planning policies and decisions should contribute to and enhance the natural character and of the local environment by protecting and enhancing the valued landscape. This application most definitely does not. A scar on the landscape for 40 years doesn't bear thinking about, especially when it's a case of short-term financial gain versus long-term social and environmental pain. As residents, landowners and as councillors, we are the custodians of our land. This should be protected for future generations, not leaving them a scrapyard legacy.
You have 1 minute.
We cannot emphasise enough. This application is different from many others in that because of the location of properties, many people will be directly affected by this indefinitely. We urge the Planning Committee to refuse this application as inappropriate, cumulative and damaging, with a devastating impact on residents and their lives. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much. And well timed. If you could go back to the seat, please. Now, we have three people listed as wishing to speak in support. Ian Cronshaw, Lizzie Teal and Richard Turner. Are you all speaking?
Yes.
Okay, so 10 minutes between you. I'll give you a nod after you've gone through nine of them. When you're ready.
Good morning and thank you for the opportunity to speak on this important application for this renewable energy project. My name is Lizzie Turrell and I'm the Senior Project Manager for the applicant.
Lizzie, could you speak up a bit, please?
We are a leading independent renewable energy company who have been developing solar projects since 2010. Our team has extensive experience of delivering and operating renewable energy projects across the United Kingdom. If consented, our aim is to build, own, and ultimately operate the solar project at Lower Mark. The project will connect into the local electricity grid, and will have a generation capacity to power the equivalent of approximately 12,700 households. This is not a speculative application. In order to build a solar farm, we require both planning permission and the ability to connect into the local power district network. These grid connection opportunities are rare. We have a formal grid connection from National Grid Electricity, which confirms that there is capacity within the network, which will be connecting by 2027 or sooner. We undertook a thorough site selection process, considering previously developed land, as well as grid connectivity, environmental, landscape, and heritage constraints. Following our consultation with the community, we explored the former power station at Meaford and Rugeley, as well as Hickson Aerodrome. These locations were not available to us, and so we arrived at our proposed location. My colleague Richard will explain shortly why it is suitable for a solar farm. As we have heard from previous speakers, we are aware that construction traffic is an area of particular interest to the local community. I'd therefore like to introduce our highways expert, Ian Cronshaw.
Thank you. The proposed development will generate minimal traffic once operational. Beyond bans and general maintenance visits to be undertaken by light vehicles will occur on average about once a week. During site construction, which will take approximately 6 months, there are estimated to be on average 10 to 11 heavy goods vehicles accessing the site per day, plus up to 30 light vehicles associated with construction staff. A proposed construction access route from the A585 Grinning Lane is proposed. Grinning Lane is a single track road in places, and it's recognised that there's local feeling that utilising this route may lead to problems. However, it's not unusual for developments of this nature, which are typically located in rural areas, to rely on single track agricultural roads for construction access. Grinley Lane is very lightly trafficked, so the majority of construction traffic will meet little or no opposing traffic. Furthermore, there are established practices for managing construction traffic movements on rural lanes through timed deliveries to minimise interaction with site traffic and other local traffic. A draft construction traffic management plan setting out these arrangements has been developed and was submitted with the application. Following feedback from the local highway authority and recognition of local concern, the applicant has agreed to implement additional management measures to ensure minimal disruption on approach to the site. These include designation of an off-site marshalling location, pilot vehicles for construction HGVs using Grinley Lane, and additional passing places. These measures go over and above what is typically expected for a construction of a development of this type. The applicant is agreeable to planning conditions to secure these measures. The Highway Authority has no objection to the development subject to conditions securing the above measures. Furthermore, the applicant has a shared interest with the local community in ensuring disruption to free flow of traffic on the approach to the site is kept to a minimum so that efficient construction can take place at the site.
Thank you, Ian. I am a planning manager for Innova Renewables, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to address this committee and also answer any questions about this vital renewable energy project that you may have. Staffordshire has experienced one of its wettest 18 months since records began, leaving farmers struggling to plant crops in waterlogged fields and communities disrupted by flooding. Climate change has made these weather events worse. It is impossible to ignore the need to tackle the climate emergency. I know this council will agree that doing nothing is not an option. DEFRA's UK food security report identified that the biggest threat to food security is climate change. The Met Office's State of the UK Climate Report was published last week, highlighting just how much impact climate change is having now on the UK. For farmers, this will come as no surprise. The best way to support our food security is to reduce carbon emissions to stop climate change worsening. It requires a collective effort from communities across the UK to host renewable energy projects, whether those be low-level solar panels like this project, or considerably larger wind turbines. As Lizzie mentioned, this site has been through a thorough site selection exercise. One of those important criteria was to identify lower grade agricultural land. This land is predominantly grade 3B and therefore not best and most versatile in line with policies. The site is currently used for grazing cattle and sheep, and the landowner will continue to do so on the land outside the solar farm and grazing sheep on the land within the array. The Secretary of State for Energy stated last week that the government will triple the amount of solar energy by 2030. To help meet this target, yesterday you may have seen that they published the draft revised National Planning Policy Framework, which places a greater policy emphasis on delivering renewables such as solar. The National Farmers Union chief advisor also stressed that solar farms do not in any way present a risk to the UK's food security. There are 3,100 agricultural holdings in Staffordshire, covering 191,000 hectares. This site comprises of less than 0.03% of this total. We have heard from the previous speaker about the solar farm, other solar farms in the area and potential cumulative impact. The fact is, none of these speculative projects have come forward and are not projects before this council at this point in time. I am aware of only one other solar farm that this committee recently approved. Other than this, Stafford Borough has no other grid-scale solar farms, to my knowledge. Those listed just now by Mr. Rayson, as far as I'm aware, are largely in adjoining authorities such as Staffordshire Moorlands and East Stafford. This council's own climate change and green recovery strategy states that the long-term sustainability is central to its vision and the local plan, which will encourage renewable energy production to achieve net zero. This application provides an opportunity to deliver on these commitments. Use of land for solar generation is time limited and completely reversible. Solar is a low impact development. The panels are driven directly into the soil and do not require soil stripping or any changes to the topography. Community consultation is a core element of all our projects, and the feedback we've had from local residents has positively influenced the overall design. As members will have seen from the site visit this morning, the solar farm itself is visually contained and will be largely invisible unless walking through the site itself. Established trees and hedgerows have been retained and provide excellent screening for the solar panels. We have worked with a landscape expert to remove some of the areas of solar panels to improve views and also improve accessibility to members of the public and the public rights of way. We do understand that people don't like to see change in the countryside, but as you would have seen from your site visit this morning, the 74-metre high wind turbine at Manor Farm, which at first attracted a lot of objections, has now become an accepted feature in the landscape. We've heard some concerns about wildlife across the site and reductions in this, but the fact the opposite is true. We have carried out extensive surveys and our design incorporates habitat enhancements that will deliver biodiversity net gain of around 80% and well over the 10% required. We know that the community has expressed some anxiety around the battery storage. The solar farms and energy storage have excellent safety records. The project complies with the recommended spacing for battery units. There is water provided on site and it is accessible from two different directions. Importantly, the fire service has raised no objections and we have taken on board their feedback. This is not an application that has been rushed through. Your officers have diligently reviewed and assessed it over the past 18 months, seeking guidance from experts and ultimately culminating in the recommendation before you today. This is an application for development identified by the previous government as a critical national priority and a technology which the Labour government has now put at the core of delivering net zero. Importantly, there are no objections from any of your internal experts or statutory consultees. The impacts are very localised, in line with the local and national policy, and this small harm is outweighed by the very significant and overriding benefits of delivering renewable energy. I thank you for your time, and I hope you will support your officer's recommendation for approval.
SMRs are the answer, not solar. Very the future.
John, thank you. Thank you very much. If you could return to your seats, please. I'd like to invite Ward Member Councillor Francis Beattie. I think you know the routine. You have 10 minutes. We'll let you know. Thank you.
Thank you, members. What I'd like to start with is the overall picture of solar energy and the impact of solar farms on the county as a whole. Solar energy, like wind power, is expected to double in size over the next decade as more of the UK economy switches to low carbon electricity. It's a profitable form of diversification for farmers, and the impending applications in this ward, which have already been referred to, testify to a surge in developer approaches. The demand will assuredly continue across Stafford Borough, challenging our ability to manage the location, the size, and the numbers. and the cumulative impact is going to be significant. Turning to the planning process itself, as we know, local planning authorities in England decide applications for smaller scale solar farms below 50 megawatts, and that's in line with our local plan and the national planning policies, and I'll come to that. But now note that the government guidance, and this is recent government guidance, states there are no hard and fast rules about how suitable areas for renewable energy developments should be identified. And it advises planning authorities to consider their potential impacts on the local environment and, importantly, the views of local communities when identifying these suitable sites. The government, in its most reassuring way, then guides development away from the best and most versatile agricultural land, and that's been referred to today. But this starting point of agricultural land classification is smoke and mirrors. The government says that agricultural land graded 1 and 2, the so-called best and most versatile land, is to be exempt from the solar farming assault. Grade 3 land, which is the ubiquitous farmland of Britain, is not safeguarded at all. Natural England's land classification map, which is there for all to see, shows that a full 92% of land across Staffordshire lies in grade 3A and 3B. Now, if you look around our farms, we produce very fine grassland for cattle, for sheep, and so on, and we produce cereals, some of them for animal feed. We produce vegetables and fruit. We produce beer, and we have a small amount indeed of Miss Campus biomass energy. And this is on what we're being told is moderate to poor land. The fact is that grade 3 land is good agricultural land. Just drive into our countryside, take a train into Stafford, and see the quality of our farms and the fertility of our fields. So despite our farms producing essential food for the nation on good farmland, opportunistic developers have a pretty free rein under the rules to apply for change of use from food production to solar farms whenever it suits their needs. The planning authority arguably has precious little control. Various companies, including speculative middlemen, and I don't include this application at all in that, have been canvassing farm after farm to set up deals. There's heavy advertising. A solar farm's an invaluable source of income for our farmers, and we have to acknowledge that. They're now outside the CAP, living in uncertain post-Brexit times. This farm concerned is one of the country's premium beef producers, many national awards to their name, a top Staffordshire farming family. Their contribution to our food production is immense. With no borough-wide policy or policies specific to solar farms, their location or their impact, and we won't have until the new local plan is produced and adopted at some future unspecified date. We have no way of dealing with cumulative impact of these solar farms through our planning policies. We're having to deal with each one on its merits. So the pressure for permission for solar farms can land anywhere in our rural borough. Can we refuse any of them? We haven't done so far. But our neighbouring authorities have. East Staffs and Moorlands have refused a recent application on the basis of cumulative impact and visual impact. We're anticipating other applications amounting to a sizable acreage of semi-industrial buildings, infrastructure and fixtures. Now I turn specifically to reflecting the concerns within the Stow Parish community and the Parish Council. I think they've been very well set out by the Parish Council representative, so I'm not in a position to repeat those, but do take note. Members are asked to scrutinise the community's concerns. Remember what I said, government guidance states that local planning authorities must consider the potential impacts on the local environment and the views of local communities when identifying suitable sites. And this community is concerned that the volume of HGVs during the construction period is obviously a problem, the visual impact of the solar panels for 40 years and beyond, what's going to happen at the end of the 40-year period, the chances that they'll still be there, noise pollution from the fans situated near to residents, the impact on Chartley Moss, which is a Ramsar site, internationally protected wetland of world importance. Actually, I politely correct the officer's report, which refers to this site as being simply of national importance. It is actually an international wetland of world importance. The community is concerned at the loss of farm jobs and farm production. And then the placement of the battery store alongside an individual's home with the potential of fumes and pollution. So the considerations for the committee are the concern at the number of solar farms earmarked for the borough and the cumulative impact of these sites, that the countryside will be semi-industrialised by this large solar farm, the risk to an ecologically protected site of world importance, that the nation requires homegrown food and this farm is a major contributor, the grid connection, has it been established, the solar farm will be an eyesore, will completely alter the landscape aspect, the recreational amenity, it can have a negative visual impact on the landscape and amenity of the users of the local footpath network, the impact of external lighting from the site and noise impact on neighbours. Officers have recommended further noise and lighting assessments, but not till after approval is given. Shouldn't this critical detail be a requirement before planning permission is given, not after, to give reassurance to the many neighbours in this community? And above all, that the opinions of the community so powerfully stated should be recognised, because this solar farm encompasses, envelops the whole of a village community. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Okay, members, we've been out to see the site visit. We saw it from all different angles. Notwithstanding climate change, etc., it is before you as a planning application, and it's in your gift to make a decision based on planning issues. So, who would like to start the batting? Councillor Phillips?
Two things. First, Chairman, my laptop hasn't been sorted. Would you mind if I do my Googling on my phone?
It's okay, as long as you're Googling something relevant.
And secondly, I know the Parish Council raised a number of questions that they deemed hadn't been answered by the developer. Is it possible for those questions to be posed and responded to at all, please?
Have you got any particular questions?
There was a list that he read out of questions that they felt hadn't been answered.
Yeah, we'll take a few more and then we'll try and get those questions. And did you have another one?
If we go to figure one, I mean, we've got plan two up here and it shows that there's in the little triangle near to the top farm, it's got the bund and the trees. Is that the area that has been changed, that's shown that it's been altered? I ask because obviously the first map that you showed had solar panels in that field, and I just wanted absolute clarification that that wasn't the case.
Am I okay?
Yes, yeah.
So you're referring to this parcel of land?
Yes.
Yeah. So when the application was originally submitted, there were solar panels here.
Okay.
They have now been omitted. This is the proposal in front of you.
Okay.
That layout is also shown on the layout landscape.
Brilliant.
And this is not a bund, it's a wildflower meadow.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Spencer.
Thank you.
I have a number of things to bring up. Maybe I can bring some things up and other things to be brought up later on. First one is the highways. I don't fully agree with the highways assessment saying, you know, and the fact that they are happy that there'll be no sort of issues. Living in a rural area myself, and I know when traffic gets diverted off a main road, it's absolute chaos. And this number of HGVs over a 6 month period, which I imagine is the best case scenario because these projects always take longer than what's envisaged, is a huge impact on the local residents. There's then the ongoing issue of, let's say, greater efficiencies in solar panels come around. Are they going to want to replace the solar panels that are there? So there'll be further HGV traffic, which of course isn't part of this application, but is an impact of that. I think it doesn't take into account, like the objector said, horse traffic, bike cyclists, walkers, and so forth. They're looking for in construction traffic, but they're not looking for local users. So I think looking at that lane that we came in on, it's going to be, it's not suitable for the traffic that's on there. It's going to have to be completely rebuilt, I would have thought, after this works, completely, or even during those works. So I think that's it. I think that's quite a huge issue. Secondly, I think what was brought up about the objectors and the supporters, there's 232 letters of support, which are basically odd from the local community, should be completely taken out of this as it being irrelevant. We should only be looking at the objections from the local community, which is almost the same. And then there's also an issue with glare and glint. It says the only times which will be glare and glint will be between 6 and 7. Well, I would argue that's when most people are up and dealing with going on about their day-to-day business, getting children ready for school, whatever it may be. So that's going to be where they're going to be most impacted. So I think that's not been taken into account either. There are some other issues, but I'd like the members to have a chance before I go on.
Councillor Jill Hood.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to take us back to the actual site visit, which it's a stunning part of the world. And we actually passed, in our very short time while we were there, 2 lorries, 3 cars, 2 crack tractors, 1 horse, 1 bike. Now, I'm led to believe that today is Wednesday. I wouldn't think a particularly busy day. But if that's typical of a Wednesday, what's it going to be like, you know, when you're talking about the weekend and people are going out, and I believe farmers work every day from dusk till dawn, and the 2 tractors were waiting to come out onto the road while we passed. We then went into a gateway and we stood where the development is going to be, and it was just so picturesque. And we saw a buzzard trying to catch a fern, and there was a tractor working not far away. And to me, it just typified an English country setting. It was stunning. There seems to be a slight difference of opinion between our people here representing the solar farm and the community, judging by the hoots of laughter. When they talked about they were in constant communication with the community, I don't think I believe that. And also, my colleague here has raised the glint. Well, surely the idea of solar panels is to have the sun fall on them throughout the day. There's going to be glint, there's going to be shine. The other thing that really worries me, I'm led to believe that the inverters make quite a noise, and surely that's going to have an impact on the wildlife. And we were told on the site visit that the battery storage was going to be lit. Now, I know from previous planning applications the detrimental devastation and impact on our bird population, our insect population. It changes their breeding patterns. Sometimes it completely decimates some breeds totally. It may be early for me to say this, but I do not support this planning application. And also, the letter that was signed by 232 people, Mr. Rayson is quite right, that can only be counted as one supporter.
If you could refrain from applauding or otherwise, it would help. Thank you. Councillor Spencer.
Can I also put this application in context UK-wide? It says that this application will support, I think it was 12,000 homes, is that correct?
12,700, was it?
Yeah.
One wind turbine in the North Sea supports 15,000 homes. So I just wonder, what is the requirement for this solar farm anyway? When we're already, the government policy at the minute is to have more wind turbines granted onshore as well as offshore, one wind turbine could offset this entire solar farm. So I don't understand the requirement for this in this area.
Thank you very much. Councillor Cooper.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just a bit concerned about the topography. There was a reference made, I think, by the developer regarding wet conditions, floods and the like. The area we're looking at, you've got to have some seriously deep water there to flood that, I suspect. It was undulating countryside. When we came back down the 518 towards Western, we were commented on the flat land there, on the left-hand side, on the western side. We've seen it regularly flooded. That would be subject to it. So the wet, the comment that the area would be suffering from significant rainfall, as we're seeing at the moment, was not impacted because it's not arable. You've got animals, I mean, this is, I mean, we've got animals on it, beef, it's a beef farm, sheep. So that argument's a nonsense, really.
Thank you. Any more speakers? Councillor Julie Reid.
I was shocked to see the landscape proposed, the side of the development that was proposed here. And I clarify the previous application would have made this a major development, and so the removal of some of the solar panels that we see there has brought this application to the size of a small development.
Under 49, right? Under 50, yeah.
I was taught the questions over the cumulative impact on Staffordshire of developments of this nature, on the rural landscape, on the rural lifestyle of people who are living in a village like Droitwich. And the 40-year viability of the solar panel type schemes in comparison to the hundreds of years that it took to create our English landscape that we have here and the importance of that, I don't think that impact is really being assessed in the whole. And with the proliferation of these types of applications, I'm very concerned and of a mind to oppose a development of this nature.
Are you proposing refusal?
My understanding is that I think we have to find. The planning grounds I would have would be in support of what Councillor Beattie has said.
Yeah, just.
Which is that I would propose that the impact on. The impact on the rural landscape and its community is too high, and that's why we should oppose it.
Thank you for that. Councillor Spencer?
I think we need to have some clear planning reasons to do so. I think one of them is the impact on the local due to sort of basically industrialisation of their local community, over intensification potentially. Effects on roads, so the highways issue, and also glare and glint. I see those being the three ones that we could go down, as far as impact on the visual immunity potentially as well. Yeah.
Councillor Cross.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I have great concerns about this. Apart from the community impact that this will go down, it's a ruddy eyesore. It's taken away, as already been mentioned, the beauty of our countryside. I also have concerns, although the Staffordshire Fire and Rescue people said there's no objections, they want advice concerning access routes being affected in the event of a fire and vapour clouds, etc., and the need for an alternative water source. It was mentioned by the objector that the substation, runs near a gas main, which has not ever been mentioned. I don't know the danger of a fire these things can cause, but no car batteries have burst into flames, and I assume this is the same sort of technology. So I fully support Councillor Reid's objection to this. I think it's just a wanton destruction of the the countryside.
So you are seconding the proposal to refuse?
I'll second the proposal to refuse.
Okay, so do we have to go to the vote now? For what reason? Okay, well, I think we've said impact in the landscape, excessive size. As you say, when we stood in that gateway, the whole of that vista up to the plantation would be wiped out by the solar panels. And so I think it is excessive development. Intrusive.
Impact on the local topography and
yeah.
visual impact on the landscape.
Yeah.
Community impact to the residents.
One at a time, please.
During the construction phase, certainly, and subsequently to any remedial works required that will not have to go through this level of traffic management that the actual construction phase will have to go through. So it's an ongoing impact.
Okay. So. You've got the grounds there.
We need to be quite patient,
Chair. Well, I think we said excessive in size, intrusive in the landscape, visual intrusion,
impact
on the community.
Glare and glint, Chair.
Sorry?
Glare and glint.
Glare and glint, yes, we can.
It is.
I'm just going to respond to some of the concerns that have been raised. So going back to the objector's comments, he questioned why pre-commencement conditions are agreed prior to the agenda being printed. Pre-commencement conditions have to be agreed with the developer before we issue any decisions, that is legislation. These agendas have to be written in advance of them being published. So 2 weeks before it was published, I wrote my report, I agreed the conditions to the agent, and that's why they were done 2 weeks in advance of the agenda being published. With regards to glint and glare, that is, there was a glint and glare assessment submitted, and it's explained in the report at paragraphs 7.8 onwards. We use a computer model to work out glint, because you know where the path of the sun is, you know where the panels are, and you know where the residential properties are. So the fact that we can pin it down to an hour around 6 o'clock in the morning only in spring and summer months, it's modelled by the computers. So I think saying that you want to refuse it on glint and glare is tricky. That is an hour a day in spring and summer months for a couple of residents.
Probably 40 years.
Okay, so that's that one. With regards to the other solar farms that have been commented on, the one at Yew Tree Farm, which is also in Droynton, that was a submission for an environmental impact assessment screening. It's not a valid planning application. It's not a valid planning application currently, so it is not a material planning consideration. These solar farm applications need to be assessed on a first-come, first-served basis, okay? So if that other one were to come in as a planning application, and say if you approve this one, when that other one were to come in, if it did, you would then have to assess the cumulative impact of anything you've approved and anything coming forward. And then there was also reference to one in East Staffs at Morton Brook. Again, I contacted East Staffs last week. They do not have a valid planning application. So those two solar farms that are referred to are not material planning considerations currently. Okay? Hopefully that's clarified that. With regards to the Chartley Moss and the impact upon it, the developer has proven that there is no existing or proposed hydrological link to Chartley Moss. We completed a habitats regulation assessment and sent it to Natural England, who reviewed it, and they have no objections to the scheme based on impact to protected sites. Hang on, I'm just going down my list. With regards to the grid connection, the developers confirmed that they had a grid connection confirmed. So it's not speculative, it is confirmed.
What's the time frame?
Thank you. With regards to the battery energy storage system, so these have to be designed with regards to separate legislation to make sure they're safe. That is, the legislation is separate to planning, okay? So the developer has to go and make sure they're safe, separate to the planning legislation. But anyway, the layout of this battery storage facility does comply with current guidance on safety regulations with regards to that.
Do you live next to one?
No comments, please, from the gallery. Thank you.
Thank you. With regards to noise. So a noise assessment has been completed and submitted. And it does realise there is noise from parts of these components. And it does recommend mitigation measures. A condition has been recommended to secure a further noise assessment prior to the commencement of development and any mitigation measures that are required, because the technology is moving so quickly and advancing so quickly at the moment. If they need it, if they were to buy an inverter now or a battery storage facility now, the mitigation measures for noise would be different to one that you buy in a month's time.
That's
because the containers that they're in and the technology within them is improving so rapidly that to now say, if we were to use the submitted noise assessment that is submitted now, which proposes a 3 metre high wall around the battery energy facility, that's not acceptable and we wouldn't want it. But we know it won't be needed, because in a month's time, the technology will be better and it will be quieter.
We are dealing with the application before us.
Correct.
Not what might happen in the future.
No.
Okay.
Yes.
But there is a condition that requires all the information, all the exact details of the inverters, the battery storage facility, to be submitted to us and approved prior to it being built.
But it's too late.
Okay, Councillor Julie Reid and then Councillor Mark. Will you first? Sorry, Mark.
Thank you. I agree with everything that's been said so far. I appreciate the fact that the developers gave us a lesson on climate change. That was very kind of them. However, have they looked at the environmental impact that actually creating the solar panels causes? Never mind when it's over here and it's in place, the initial production creates a massive impact on the environment.
In China.
Technology is going to advance, particularly with the way that we are currently looking at climate change and the way that we want to try and make this sustainable. And I think that the technology that we're looking at now is going to be null and void when the new technology starts to show itself. We'll be looking at these massive, massive blocks on the landscape and wondering why it was ever allowed in the first place, particularly when you've got a wind turbine, as Councillor Spencer has said, producing the same amount of power as all those fields of panels. They're not in the right place. This isn't the right time. It is a horrific blot on the landscape. It's, please excuse the phraseology, but in my opinion, it's a rape of the countryside. And I feel that there are better ways to do this than the way that it's being done. And I know that we've been told that we're going to accept it. It's going to be visually something that we become used to, just like we have with wind turbines. But I'd like to remind the developers that Stafford was built on a marsh.
Absolutely.
And although we accept that Stafford looks the way that it does now, would we accept that same visual impact if Stafford ended up in Cannock and Stone and Dog, and we had housing and development all over the place and no fields at all? Because I would say we wouldn't. So how is that argument even something for us to look at? It's just not. It makes no sense. I think that we should go to a vote, personally.
I think we had a proposal.
What are the reasons, Chair?
Excessive development, visual impact.
They're not reasons. We
must have something in our policy somewhere where it says about visual impact on the areas.
That's material condition.
Visual impact.
In
terms of visual impact, are you referring to the overall nature of what a solar farm looks like?
In this location.
Are you referring to
the impact of a solar farm development in the context of this particular site, because each application has to be dealt with on its own merits, and nationally solar farms have been acceptable visually in other parts of the country, so you've got to demonstrate harm in terms of what is the harm to the locality from this proposal.
Well, this is what we're talking about, this particular one. Julie, I think you're in it.
Can I say more about, or you, ask more about this, the cumulative effect on the county or the area? So we cannot oppose this proposed development on the basis that there are no valid similar planning applications currently. Is that right?
Yeah,
so it's basically.
So this is an application in its own right. The other applications have not been submitted. They're not valid planning applications. They're not material planning considerations. So the cumulative effect of this is, if there isn't any.
Yeah. Yes. However, we know that they have happened, and everybody. So people have seen a lot of information on them. The major difference between those that I've seen and this one is that the access. The choices seems to have been made on the basis of access to the national grid only. We've got a pile on there, but disregarding the fact that there is an old community living in that area, and that's the concern I have, that there may not be any other similar valid applications, but actually we do know that there are plenty of them. They just haven't been approved. And the major difference between those and this one is it's directly adjacent to an old community in our landscape. And that's the sort of effect that we are putting. We're putting that at risk on the basis of what?
Councillor Spencer?
I think, go back to maybe some valid planning reasons potentially. Visual impact, I think we haven't looked at 3 footpaths which run through the site. One of which appears to have been blocked, potentially on purpose, who knows. Equipment from the south of the site. Also, the compound, which is going to be constructed, which I presume is in the area where that's the bund is proposed, coming in there. That's going to be there for, I presume, at least 6 months. There's going to be significant disruption of the field, the soil, and so forth in that area. Large degree of hard scaping is going to be required there. What's going to happen to that house? Is it going to be decommissioned? They are always a focus for additional crime. It's already been highlighted that these solar farms increase crime by about 48%, and they've got already concerns as it is. So I'd say that's potentially a planning concern, this, the increase in crime, and how is this compound going to be dealt with in the future? Is it going to be retained? Is it going to be put back? And I've also got a few concerns on the flooding as well. We're going to have trackways throughout the site. Presumably, again, they're going to be hard standing, so they're going to be preferential pathways, which will no doubt completely miss out the swales and go directly into the Brook. So there will be wash off from that into that sort of catchment. So I think there's wider issues as well as what's been already been highlighted.
Councillor Tony Nixon.
I agree with everything that's been said. What we really need is a valid reason for refusal, because if we haven't got a reason to refuse on planning grounds, we're wide open to appeal and the costs incurred with an appeal. So we really, if we're going to refuse it, we need a valid planning reason to refuse it on.
Well, it's within the gift of this committee to make that decision, and if you feel that you want to go one way, you can do that. I believe there is visual impact here is a consideration.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's what we use on other applications where we see someone build a house and it's impacting on someone else. So visual impact. I feel like sometimes you're being railroaded, you know, like climate change ticks everything outside. Like we need to build more houses, but they've got to be 6 stories high. You know, that's the sort of nonsense that we're
absolutely
in.
Yeah, yeah.
Councillor Julie.
So should we add amenity impact to visual and amenity impact?
What do you mean by amenity, Councillor? It's a very general term.
So we were talking about footpaths.
That's a visual amenity.
That's a visual immunity, isn't it?
It's the experience of the views of the footpath.
Yes.
On what they
yeah,
visualise around them.
Yes.
So not in terms of noise. So you're not talking about amenity in terms of noise. It's a visual impact. When you say amenity.
Well, we are talking about in terms of noise, aren't
yeah,
we?
If you're going to come up with a planning reason, you've got to be quite specific about what you're refusing the application on.
Loss
of agricultural loss.
Councillor Spencer.
Suitability of access during the construction phase and subsequent further development, which undoubtedly will have to happen, as we've already been touched on, technologies will increase. If solar panels generally have they lose over time, maybe they've got a 20-year lifetime, maybe 25, they'd want to, I imagine, change them out before then. So there'd be additional movements down lanes which are totally unsuitable for a large-scale industrial development of this type.
Right, I'm going to ask Richard to come in.
Okay.
But before you do, though,
yeah.
Just think, why is visual impact not a valid planning reason?
You need to refine it. Visual impact, in what sense is there a visual impact? Is it from the overall form of a solar farm development in that rural location? Well, those have been accepted nationally, but you need to further just say what the visual impact is.
But when we first started, we looked across that field, and as you say, there's buzzards flying, and the tractor was going down there, and it goes across 750 metres across that field. That's 750 metres by about 200 metres wide of solar panels. Now, that has got to be a visual impact.
So, I'm just trying to clarify here, Chair. Is it the extent of the development and its overall form? Is that what committee's saying your concerns are in terms of a visual impact?
It's a visual impact.
Because an appeal statement would have to clarify that.
And the visual impact on the landscape.
I think what we're trying to do here, and I think just as an explanation for everybody else, the officers are duty-bound to come up with a definitive reason to object. It's not that they're being awkward or anything like that. They have their rules to go by.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about now. Now, in terms of visual impact, there are solar farms all over the place, and they have a visual impact being put there in the middle of nowhere. This is right next to an old community in a village. I mean, what an incredibly dramatic change on that area. And I think the visual impact is because of the proximity to the village and the community, coupled with the substation with its plug lighting and everything else. That's, you know, that's all a dark area is suddenly going to become a football pitch.
Okay.
So that's why we're talking about visual impact.
Yeah. Yep. I made a note actually. It equates to 86 football pitches, the whole site. Councillor Hobbs.
Is it harm to landscape character?
Harm to the character of the landscape is what you're proposing. Do you want to speak, Jill?
Yes, I would like to just point out that solar panel crew actually said that they've been to look at Hicks and Airfield. How on earth can you compare that to this tranquil, idyllic, most beautiful part of Staffordshire? Well, Costa, yes, exactly. You know, what on earth makes them think they can put this monstrosity in the middle of this area? And it's not just in the middle, it will engulf the whole community. And I think that we should say that it's the visual impact on the amenity and the community. It's just not acceptable.
Should be on shared roofs like Aston Martin.
John, if any more, anyone keeps interrupting, we can ask you to leave the room. So
I think we should put him on a shared roof.
Councillor Jones.
Yeah, I agree with Councillor Horder. I've been very impressed with the way that the community have addressed the issue, the points that have been raised, and I think we need to recognise that in our decision, and I think the wording that we've now got exactly does that.
Yeah. Thank you. Right, are you happy that we can take a vote now?
We don't have a material planning refusal yet, because you need to attach it to a planning policy.
So where in our documents does it say visual intrusion? Can someone look through our
Does someone have a local plan?
Chairman, is it possible to ask the ward councillor if there's anything specifically that she would be aware of?
Thank you. Councillor Beattie?
Well, I would have picked out the alteration to the landscape character and the visual impact of the development on a complete community. The fact is, it's involving the whole of one village community,
correct.
Which is quite profound.
So we just need to find that policy.
I stupidly didn't put down the policies. I nearly always give them to you, but on this occasion I didn't. And I'm sure it's in the local plan, and it's also in the NPPO.
There are policies referred to in the report.
I've got them here. NPPF paragraph 174 to 188. They should contribute to and enhance the natural and local environment by protecting and enhancing the valued landscapes.
Thank you.
There you go.
Okay.
Okay. Are you? Could you repeat it, please?
Okay.
Okay. So 174 to 188. Are you happy that would tick the box?
I'm not advising on that.
Right. Okay. Well. Based on that policy, then.
Is there any, Mr. Chair? Is there anything else that we're that other board members potentially, or committee members, are liking to attach?
Please.
Are looking to attach to that an addition to that one policy? I'm just concerned, as has been brought up by Captain Nixon, that this could go to appeal and could be overturned relatively simply.
I suppose is it excessive in its size? Because you could have a half the size, which would not be viewable from public points, but presumably. We want to get to this 49.9.
I think there's one, sorry, Chair. It says in the documents that a surface water drainage plan, I think, is going to be submitted at a later time and will be approved at a later date. Is that correct?
Sorry, say that
surface again. Water.
Surface water flooding and so forth will be approved at a later date or within the.
So the submission includes a flood risk assessment, which includes an indicative drainage plan. Mm-hmm. The county flood team have reviewed that, agree with the FRA, agree with the indicative drainage plan, and the condition requires a final drainage plan to be based on that indicative one.
So in it says how that drainage along the front, I imagine the front side of these panels, is optional. Now, is that optional? Was that taken into account in the flood risk assessment, as in they will be there or they won't be there?
You mean the linear filter drains?
Indeed.
That run between the sides? So they are optional. So once the developer's flood team or drainage team would go and do their final assessment, they would decide whether the swales are significant enough to contain all the water, or if they also need the filter drains as well. And that would be within the final drainage plan, which would be approved by the county flood team.
Right, so it's not fully been approved. It's what we're saying, it's not fully approved in its current state, right?
No, we would need a final drainage plan to be secured by a condition and approved by the county team.
So in other words, then, the location of the swales as they are as such and the size and depth of them could change.
It's indicative, so the final design needs to be based on this, so it's highly unlikely that they're going to significantly move locations. It may be they get the swales are between 1 and 5 metres, so we're expecting some range within that when they get their final calculations. I think they should work out policy refusal for you.
Who went first? Brian or Marnie?
I think Brian.
Councillor Cross.
Just again, going into the report on page 20, policy N9 of the plan for Stafford Borough expects development proposals to sustain and, where appropriate, enhance the significance of heritage assets and their settings by understanding blah blah blah. Surely this monstrosity does not enhance our heritage assets in any way.
Yes, you can.
Just in response to that, as discussed in the presentation and it's in the report, the development is considered to cause less than substantial harm to heritage assets. That harm is at the lower end of the spectrum, and the harm that is caused needs to be balanced out by public benefits of the scheme, which is considered there are sufficient energy production.
Councillor Phillips?
Sorry, so regarding that then, if you've got a wind turbine that's in the same area that produces the same amount of power, is that not enough to be able to say that this is causing undue harm to the environment?
Can I clarify that, please? Do you mean the existing wind turbines that are in East Staffs, or do you mean a speculative future wind turbine?
No, the wind turbine that we could visually see. That was apparently caused all sorts of problems with the locals, but have got used to it, as the developer said.
Councillor Spencer, Councillor Nixon, sorry.
Again, going back to what Councillor Spencer was saying, and what the officer was also saying about public benefit. Again, draw back to the single wind turbine in the North Sea would outweigh this. So there's no, I cannot see a public benefit of this scheme when a single wind turbine can offset it. Where's the benefit?
Four times.
Well, it was 50.
You said it a few times.
Councillor
Nixon.
Thank you,
Chair.
It should be.
Page 12 of the report, impact on character and surroundings. Section 12 of the MPPF seeks to achieve well-designed and beautiful places. And I would suggest this isn't a well-designed, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest it's contrary to Section 12. If that is an appropriate reason, that's impact on character and surroundings.
Okay. I don't sense there's anybody around the table here who's likely to support this.
No, but I'm thinking of a valid planning reason.
But I think we've got the visual intrusion, impact. Well, we've attached it to the policy as well, haven't we?
Yeah, I agree.
We've attached it to the policy.
We'll come back in a second.
Okay, we'll try and get the wording sorted. But, I mean, just in comment, I just don't think we should be railroaded. Councillor Phillips?
I know we were talking about the power lines. We were discussing the power lines earlier on and how, you know, it's okay having a substation where it was because it doesn't visually impact any more than the power lines do, but they're necessary because of the area and the lack of utilities. whereas this is not necessary, it's not something that's going to be feeding the local community. So it's not going to enhance their lives in any way. It's not going to benefit them in any way. Can we not go down the section 12 of the MPP suggested by Councillor Nixon?
I mean, this committee will be dealing with other applications in the future, and so so we need to set our benchmark somewhere.
I think, Chairman, that if this application had come forward next to a motorway, I think that the view of this committee would maybe not quite be the same as it is today. Location, suitability of location is absolutely everything. Mm. and it's just not. It's just the wrong place, completely wrong place. It's a frustrating position to be in as committee members when we everybody's against it and we are desperately trying to find a reason that's going to stand strong when the applicant decides to go for an appeal.
We've got a reason.
Okay. Reasons for refusal.
Part one.
Members, if you just bear with me, there's been quite a few exchanges here with wording, etc., and issues. So you'd say that the proposal, by reason of its visual impact the proposal, by reason of its overall extent in terms of its land take and the actual form of the solar panels themselves, result in a visual impact, an intrusive feature, and also in relation to its proximity to Drawington. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, landscape character.
Well, we've come up with paragraphs 135 and 180 in the MPPF and policy N1 of the local plan. Now, landscape character is a bit more, in terms of landscape character, that's slightly different from visual impact, because you've got to assess the overall quality of what the intrinsic character of this area and what makes up the landscape character. You've not really done that.
How do you propose we do that in committee?
Yeah. There is a landscape character document which zones the region and it also has subcategories as well. So you're straying into a different area there.
But as Councillor Phillips said, if it was alongside the M6, that's a totally different character.
In terms of character assessment, there's a supplementary planning document which is from the County Council, which subdivides the region into landscape character assessment zones and then sub-regions, and it apportions different characters, different qualities to each of those. In terms of character, are you saying that this is? Are you trying to say that it's the rural character of the area? It's verbal quality, etc. Is that what you mean by character?
Indeed. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So it would be intrusive and have a visual impact because of the form of the solar farms in relation to the character of the area,
its rural setting.
Yeah. I would say rural setting.
And community.
Yeah.
And views from public highways.
Yeah.
It is the setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Have we got words? Yeah.
Because there's this reason for refusal to slide the fluid,
yeah.
I'd like to tighten it up,
yes, it
and then pass it by the chairman for agreement.
It does need to be tightened.
So we have. So if we are going to go down this line, officers will come up with a form of wording which contains those elements for them to be agreed by the chairman prior to it being issued.
Section N8, is it? Landscape character?
No, N1.
But also we've got N8 here, landscape character.
But if you look at...
It's just page 19, paragraph 4.37.
Okay, I think the planners have now got words that we can develop, if that's the right word.
Chairman, can I just come back to Councillor Spencer? So, policy N8, it starts, this is the opening text. Development proposals must be informed by, and be sympathetic to, landscape character and quality, demonstrated through local site-specific assessments in the context of the Staffordshire landscape character assessment. So we haven't done that.
So we haven't done that, and yet it's...
With the historic landscape character assessment. So development should demonstrate that proposals with landscape and visual implications should, and then it lists a number of criteria.
So that should be done, and it hasn't been done.
It has been done, but you've not demonstrated in this discussion this morning that it's contrary to that policy.
Well, what has the council defined in that assessment?
So the LVIA document was submitted, landscape and visual impact assessment that was submitted and reviewed by our landscape architect, it's an external from the council that we employ. It was assessed and it's broken down in the report in the landscape section, and the magnitude of change which I read out in the report in the presentation were low. So to say it's going to have an adverse impact is
quite subjective,
Chair, it says moderate adverse, then in the first year, then going to minor adverse to 15 years. So it's not, I would argue that's not low. Moderate is surely a level above low.
Yeah. Yeah. How are we doing? Okay, John Holmes.
Chairman, as Councillor Nixon said, any reason for refusal needs to demonstrate material planning considerations, and there need to be things that you can justify on appeal, because this is likely to go to appeal. If what Richard has suggested in terms of the broad wording and in terms of the local plan policy and the MPPF is something where there is some policy backing. What we're saying in terms of N8 is that you haven't demonstrated that. If you add that as an additional reason, in our opinion, it's likely that wouldn't be substantiated on appeal, and regardless of the outcome, there's likely to be an application for costs because you can't demonstrate that.
So we stick with the first.
So what my view is that you stick to something that you can justify. Take a vote on that.
So do you just want to just remind us what we're going to be voting on? The word.
Okay.
And sorry, just to clarify, these are some basic words which are going to be tightened up.
It will be put into a reason for refusal. These are just the key.
Yes.
The salient points, the key points that we've raised today. So the proposal, by reason of its overall extent in terms of its land take, its form within the landscape, and its proximity to Drunton and its rural setting, and which can be viewed from public rights of way, would have a detrimental impact on the landscape and be visually intrusive.
Yeah, it needs
refining, but in basic terms, is that what members are saying?
Okay, so I'm just going to try and remind myself who proposed it. Was it you, Julie, first of all? Yeah.
I'm happy to.
And
Julie,
and then Brian Cross. So proposed by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Cross to refuse on the grounds outlined by Richard, just there, please show your hands. Okay, well done everyone. The application is refused.
Last day.
Be honest.